So I saw that the people from WordCamp Canada are they're doing some great work. It's really nice. They want to find out who I am. I'm one of the keynoters at their conference in October, and I'm totally looking forward to it. I think we should be having our tech conferences in Canada, actually, for the foreseeable future, simply because tech is very international. And, you know, if I were coming to North America for a tech conference, I wouldn't want to have to go through customs coming into the United States and whatever that implies. I just wouldn't feel safe doing it. And I don't feel that it's appropriate for us as Americans to invite people to come here as long as we have our government is so out of control, so really un-American. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to go to Canada, is to make that offer to people from around the world, that if you want to come somewhere to talk about technology and the web and specifically social media and how we can make that the web. See, my position is, and I think I can back this up, is that there's no web in social media. The web means something. It was revolutionary and it's still there. It hasn't gone anywhere. I know how revolutionary it was because I tried to exist in the software world before the web, and it was good for a while, but then the big companies took over, and all of a sudden, there was no outlet for creativity for the individual, and that's the thing that made personal computers so amazing, is that an individual could create a product that then would have huge influence and also make a lot of money, you know? And that had disappeared, and then along comes the web, and it just blows all the doors open, and I couldn't believe how it went from so bad to so good in just one thing. That one little invention by Tim Berners-Lee, I could give a whole talk about why that was so significant and why it teaches us so much about design of protocols and formats. And they don't have to be big, complicated things. They can be revolutionary in their simplicity. That was the thing about the web, you know. Things like what the web did existed before, but they made it so complicated. And the web just made it so easy that it was almost hard to find the web, to be honest with you. But once you did, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this. I didn't do any work, and there we are. I'm on the internet. I'm in New York, so we do that. We talk like that. But I'm going to Canada, so we have to, like, I don't think they do that like we do it in New York. So, anyway, the latest thing that they've dug up, which I think is fascinating, love it. It's written in 2007 by Joel Spolsky, who is a very smart guy, who has since then gone on to do some incredible things. And very, very successfully, and a great thinker and a pioneer of blogging. My community named him Blogger of the Year. I think it might have been the first year we had Blogger of the Year. We did it for a number of years, whatever. It sort of has become something else at this point. But we voted. He was number one. And so the question was about comments and what role do they play in blogging? And I'm so glad they picked up on that in the WordCamp Canada world. And they want to talk about that. And I totally want to talk about that. And I want to point them to some work we've been doing with Wordland. This is Scott Hansen, who is a member of the scripting community. And he's been extremely helpful over many years in various different projects. And I owe a tremendous, debt of gratitude to Scott. It's like we all need people like that. We need more of them. If you want to roll up your sleeves and you know about tech, we could always use some help. So anyway, I asked Scott to learn how to do a template, what I call a template, for WordPress site, because one of the last things I wanted to do before finishing Wordland is to not just throw it in the middle of WordPress world without an attitude, without something to say, well, this is how we think you should start. And I'm not saying where it goes, but we came up with a theme that's called baseline. And it's what it is. It's like, let's say that we just took out everything that isn't necessarily part of a blog, and that is what we're going to produce. That's what we're going to offer. Say, look, this is, if you want to get started with a blog on WordPress using Wordland, or actually using anything, you don't have to use Wordland to use the baseline theme. It's there for you to use. And so the question that Joel said, he quoted me, and I say, I don't actually think comments are part of a blog. In fact, I also said that I think comments can work against blogging and make something that was a blog into not a blog, because with comments, you invariably end up doing groupthink. You try to anticipate how not to get a negative reaction from the people who are your regular commenters. I know, because I had the first discussion group in the blogosphere. It was called discuss.userland.com, and it was attached to Scripting News. And at first, it was wonderful. If you go back through the archives of that, what you'll see there are all the people who became sort of the first generation of bloggers before they had blogs. This is where they were. This is sort of a place that I'm proud of it. I mean, it was a place where the blogosphere was born from. This is what I was trying to do. I was writing a blog before anybody was writing blogs. And so, like, there were a lot of people reading it, but nobody got the idea that they could do this too. And all the time I'm making software and putting it out there and saying, here, if you want to make one of these things, here's some software that you can use that'll make that work for you. And eventually we had a hit. We had actually several of them, where all of a sudden there are hundreds of people blogging, you know? And it was what a thing to see. And one day but it's relevant, actually. I saw a blog roll. It was like the first one I had ever seen. I had a blog roll myself, okay? I was always pointing to people that I thought were interesting, but I saw somebody else's blog roll. And I see, oh my God, it just goes on and on. Look at all those people. And I felt so proud. I was like, man, this shit is working. Everything I thought the internet or the web specifically was capable of doing, of making normal people writers, turning them into public writers, I was going, wow, it's working. And then I opened up each one, and they were all flaming about me. They were all talking about what an asshole I was and how I was limiting their creativity and how I was the cop and I was this bad guy. The image that I got that they were drawing of me was like the little Monopoly guy. It was like Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or worse. I mean, you know, they loved those guys. They absolutely hated me. And I didn't expect it. I was very, very surprised. Later, I think I really do think I understand. I was accessible. I showed up on the discussion groups. I wanted to be part of the community. I wasn't above it. And so they could pick fights with me and they could feel insulted by something that I did or didn't do. It was like there was nothing I could say or do that wouldn't piss people off, you know? I once went to a party in the Valley. This was one of the venture capitalists has an annual summer, pre-summer party, and it's like, it's really nice. It has a view out onto one of the canyons in the area. And you know, a lot of young, interesting people show up there and you drink. maybe you get a date out of it. It sometimes happens, you know. And at one time after this party, I go and I read somewhere it said, you know, he just walked right by us and he didn't even say hello. Because I was walking to the bathroom, probably. It's like I wasn't looking for conversation. I was looking for a way to relieve myself. And people forget about the humanity of people, or they objectify them. They never stop doing that, no matter what happens. It's just not fair. I mean, you know, you could prove your humanity, and they'll never treat you like a human being if you become objectified. All this is part of the whole business of comments. So I got a heavier dose than in that time frame than anybody in the period that Joel's writing about, that in 2007. Still, I was still the focal point for a lot of hate. And, you know, like, I have to say this. In my own defense, people say I was impossible to work with. This is something people say about me to this day, you know? And I'd like them to think about something next time somebody says that. Is like, well, look at the things that I've accomplished and look at how many people I had to work with to make that happen. And maybe you're wrong, and maybe I am exceptionally good at working with other people. And I actually believe that I am, because I understand one of the most important things about working with other people is compromise. If it's not important to you, you don't have to win the point. You let them have something if they want it. Let's move on. You know, I wrote that. I wrote a thing called Rules for Standards Makers, and I talked about in there one standard session I had with a group of developers at Microsoft, and I said, you know, at the outset, we're always going to go for the worst possible name for anything. And I said, I really mean it. So, like, if you ever say, I've got a better name for this, and I said, well, that's exactly why we're not using it. You know, I was like, let's get that out of the way, that we don't have to have the perfect name for things. And, you know, remember that people who don't even, we're going to do these names in English, but remember that the people who, for them, English isn't their language, these names don't mean anything. They're just words, you know? They're just strings of letters that they learn how to pronounce, and they understand what they mean from the context of which they're being used. And so we don't ever need to argue about that. And don't ever improve a format by changing the names of things. This is like one of my big things. It was like a really easy test to see if people have their heads up their asses or not about standards. If they're changing the names of fundamental things that already mean something in people's software and in their minds, then they're not serious about this. They're not doing it for the right reason. The reason is interrupt. It's the only reason you ever do any of these things. If you're looking for something else, then you're looking for lock-in, friends. And you're anti-standards. The ability to compromise is like fundamental. You don't go into this shit without that. If anybody is not compromising, and that's the big companies, they don't feel like they have to listen to anybody. It's like this crazy shit that happens. And then they get involved in the internet, and then their people turn into the biggest flamers out there. Why? I don't know. Did they decide? Are they getting a bonus for doing this? You know, it doesn't look good when a big famous company attacks an individual developer. You know, like, oh, I could tell you stories. I'm not going to today. But look, the point about it is that people will show up wherever there's flow and try to grab some of that flow for themselves. That nothing is ever going to change that. So if you open up your site to comments, a lot of them are going to be, in this context, spam. They're just trying to grab some of your flow. They're saying something, so not so that they can be heard, but that they can attract people's attention, because that's all that matters here. Well, if you take the comments off, then you're just writing into what might appear to be a vacuum. And it's got its disadvantages. I would love to hear from everybody, but most people you hear from aren't worth hearing from. Okay, so in the baseline theme, we just stripped out everything but your blog, and that's all that's there. And I did that because one is that, honestly, I don't like the way the standard WordPress site looks. It's a mess, and I can't stand a mess. I want to clean that shit up. And I want to go minimal. I really don't want distractions. My ideas are there, and I want people to read the ideas, and I don't want them to go trailing off into something else. Stay focused right here. This is what I'm talking about. That's kind of what I want the design to say. And then, I wanted to go back to the beginning when we didn't have any of these things and see if we can't come up with something different that doesn't have all the problems that the discourse systems that we've put together, because they're all the same. They all have same basic rules, the same basic functions, all the moderating features that you need to have when your thing is open to the world. It's like they're all the same and they all have huge problems. They all lead to the same thing. Tons of abuse, tons of spam, and very little good stuff in between. That's really a key point. Ask yourself, when was the last time you got a comment or saw a comment that really added some value to the discussion? It does happen, and there are places that are better than others. It's not necessarily because they have better moderation. It's just because they're newer and they're more distributed and it's harder to find the places to tack the spam on. You know, they'll figure it out eventually and those places will be bad too. So I have very concrete ideas about what would work better than the system that we have right now. And once we have the base out there, the baseline, and the baseline for Wordland includes a bunch of stuff that isn't out yet. And some of it, which I haven't put the spotlight on yet, because I don't know, it's like too much to put a spotlight on. I don't have that much attention from people to be able to just disperse it. But there's an awful lot of stuff here that's out in the open that people could be building on right now. And I hope they will build on them in the future. But I do have a plan for discourse, and I've written about it on my blog. And I can probably dig up a pointer to it. It's patterned after something that I had working in the very early days of scripting.com and DaveNet. DaveNet was the first sort of channel of blogging that I had, the one that started in 1994. And it went to the web and it went out via email. And the pieces weren't like on a pulse or anything. They were just like, as I had something to say, I wrote a piece. Once I edited it up, it went to the web and it went out by email to the subscribers in groups of 8 or 11. I think it was one or the other at different times. And then really interesting discussions would sometimes erupt in the group of 8. And it was all chosen at random. You don't know who these people are. Sometimes you do. Sometimes it puts two really interesting people together at random. And the thing that I wrote about turns out to be stimulating to the people that actually got commented, copied on it. You know, it could be really interesting at times. But then also, if I got a reply to one of the emails that I thought was not just that it was interesting, but that it's something that an informed person would want to know about. That's the criteria. And that's how I do my link blogging, by the way. It's just that's all. It doesn't matter if I agree or disagree. Would an informed person want to know about this? And if the answer is yes, out it goes. If the answer is no, it doesn't mean that that there was no value to what you wrote. It just didn't meet the criteria. And so I had to mail this idea of a mail page. And I would just... there would always be an open mail page. And then sometimes when I felt like, okay, this is time for a fresh one, I would just start a new one. And I had scripts for this. So all I had to do was I was using Eudora, which is an email app for the Mac. And it was very nicely scriptable. In that era, apps were scriptable. And that's where I came from. I worked on Frontier. A product called Frontier was a scripting environment, object database, verb set, editing and debugging tools. It was like a really comprehensive, beautiful scripting environment. And its focus was on having protocols that allow people to plug their apps into it so that you could program them as well and then create new apps out of those apps. And Eudora was one of the best examples. Very nicely scriptable, and email is a very useful app in the scripting world, because that's how things come to you. And so when an email comes in and I go, oh, that's really nice, why don't we put that on the mail page? And all I had to do, and then we had a thing called menu sharing that allowed the scripting system to put a scripts menu in the app. It had to support it. The app had to actually implement a toolkit that made this possible. But a lot of people did it, and Eudora was one of them. Microsoft did it in their Internet Explorer, Netscape did it in Navigator. We were kind of all working together in this period in the early days of the web. It was really something. You say to somebody, hey, you know, why don't you put menu sharing in there? And then they go ahead and do it, you know, because there wasn't a lot of supervision either. The companies were kind of like, you know, they're making a product. You're talking to the guy who does the Mac version. You say to him, why don't you put this in there? He goes, I don't know. It looks interesting. He puts it in and it's out there, you know, 5 days later. It's really cool. Yeah. So anyway, And so I would choose a command. I put a command in there. The idea of the scripts menu is that a user programmer could put a command in the menu, and then it's as if it was a feature of the product itself. So I put a command in there, say ship to mail page. Whatever the email I have open, it goes to the mail page. And then I go over to the source page, to the source code, the edited version, where I edit that page. And then I would just tweak it up and change a little bit, you know, correct spelling errors, capitalization, things like that. I didn't want to make people look bad, but, you know, even if they didn't, work too hard on it, it didn't have to, but I didn't work that much on them. I wasn't like an editor. I just made it look okay, you know. And the mail pages are still there. You can go see them. They're like static pages on scripting.com. I'll put a URL in the show notes for this if I can remember to do that. And I'd like to do something that's modeled on that. That's going to be my first step, or that's my first step in the thinking process. And I'm probably just going to go for it. And it wouldn't work because I don't have a scriptable email app anymore. They don't make them. Eudora, I don't know if Eudora is still around. I don't use it. I use Gmail. It's possible we could automate some portions of this, but probably won't use email, actually, to be clear. Actually, almost certainly will not use email. And so the idea is this, is that, you know, you can comment on my post if you want to, but I'm the only person who's going to see it. And so we've now cut down on abuse substantially because you can't say anything about me publicly without my permission in this context. You can go ahead and put it on your blog, but that isn't why you're putting it on my blog. You're putting it on my blog so you can get in front of the people who read my blog. But you're free to put whatever you want, but people, some for whatever reason, don't find that particularly attractive. So you can send me the email, and you could definitely hurt my feelings. There's no question about that. You know, at this point in my life and with my experience, it's actually pretty hard to hurt my feelings because I kind of have a very negative view of people who say personal things to strangers. And I also have a very hard and fast rule for dealing with that. I just block them. They never get a chance to do it again. So, you know, if you're into that shit, you could do it once, but that's it. You'll never get to do it again. But you can't say it to the world through me without my permission. But if, you know, let's go back to the criteria for the mail pages. If you say something that an informed person would want to know, and I consider that a very high bar, you get over that bar, and damn right I'm going to send it out. Of course I'm going to, because that's what I'm into. You don't have to agree with me. For crying out loud, you can show me that I'm wrong, and I would listen, and I would change my mind. Have done it many, many times. Sometimes I put out things. This is part of the blogger's ethos. Is sometimes you put out things that you're like really not sure at all about, knowing that people will correct you. Now, you don't say things that are deliberately wrong, and if you're not sure, you try to say that you're not sure. So people understand that, you know, don't put a lot of weight on this one because I'm not actually sure about that. But it's okay to take a risk in your writing. And I think with that one little change where it says, look, you can't just respond here. I mean, you can, but nobody's going to read it unless I think they need to read it. And I'm also going to moderate this shit. So, you know what? Like I said, you get one chance to screw me over and you're never going to get another one. That's the end of that. So that would be the first approach. And far from the only approach that's ever been tried, but I think it's a good one. And I think you could build quite a social network out of that kind of a structure. I also think that there are structures that have never been tried, that the only thing that social media apps ever want to do is grow. But maybe there's a place for ones that deliberately do not want to grow, where I have the 10 people that I think are the most fantastic writers that always entertain me. They have incredible minds, an incredible sense of humor, and lots of love, and specifically good feelings about me personally, because I hate people who get negative. I grew up with all those people. I wanted to get away from them. You know, there's just too much of that shit in the world. It's like, oh no, you don't really need to tell me that I'm a piece of shit. It isn't something I'm going to put a lot of credence in anyway. But it's annoying. I want people that are opposite. I don't want them to kiss my ass, but I want them to generally be positively inclined to hear what I have to say. And then we put that together, and they also have to be writers too. And then that becomes a product, you know, and it becomes, and I don't mean that we charge for it. I just mean it's become something that's worth giving a title to. And then I don't just want to do that. I want to make the tools for people to do that. I want to get back to the, hopefully this will be my last comment because I've been going 25 minutes, but, there was a time, and the web was fantastic, as I've told you. It's like when I discovered it, I realized it had every problem solved that we had gotten lost in the commercial tech world, which is what I was part of before. And the thing that made it so great is the barriers to entry were tiny, almost non-existent. The thing was so damn simple that from a technological standpoint, that became the complexity. As out of all of this potential, what path am I going to pick through this? Because I could go any direction I want to a place where I would say after Twitter, after Facebook, those were like the two big milestones. The whole world was closed off to everybody but the people who worked at those companies. We went right back to where we were. And plus, they all had a very negative relationship with the web. That's why we were excluded, why we couldn't. You know, if there was a problem with Twitter, the only choice you had was to reinvent the whole Twitter so you could fix that problem. And, you know, that doesn't work. That's diseconomic. We can't all reinvent Twitter. Turns out none of us could reinvent Twitter until, like, Twitter decided to evaporate, which unfortunately hasn't created any new opportunities because, you know, Blue Sky, has an API, but it's like I said on Twitter today, it's like, you know, the blue pill and the red pill. The red pill is the one in The Matrix, which is one of my favorite movies, is in the Matrix, the red pill is the one you take if you want to deal with what's real. You want to see the actual world. The blue pill is the one that you take if you want to be in the dream world, plugged in, you know, in your base of your spine to this, you know, movie that's real. And so you can go blue pill, which is asleep, red pill, which is awake. And we've all taken the blue pill online. And the weird part about it is that there are many blue pills and they don't work with each other. So you get to take Twitter's blue pill and Blue Sky's blue pill and Mastodon's blue pill and Threads and Facebook. And they all have their blue pills. They all have their little reality thing that isn't real at all. And they all seem to have copied the limits that Twitter adopted. It's really stupid. Twitter to completely turned off most of the features in the web, all the important ones, that's for sure. And they all continue to do that. And it's like, no, we need to shake this shit up. We need to make this change. And so I think there's a red pill here, and the red pill is, I didn't make it up. It's called the World Wide Web. We were the recipients of a huge gift. All we have to do is say we want it. And that is going to mean you're going to be dealing with a reality that they've been insulating you from. You know, the governments, the big tech companies, the billionaires, all that shit, they have been giving you their reality. They've been pushing you to live in their world. And it's very profitable for them. But as we found out, it sucks for us. And so, all right, that's enough for today. And I want to say one more thing. Thanks to the people from WordCamp Canada. We're going to have a great conference. There may not be a lot of people there, But we're going to be well prepared for it. We're going to have considered a lot of new ideas, and we're going to talk about a future that, in my opinion, is built around WordPress. If we get to where I want to go, WordPress will be the operating system for the web. And, you know, not because I want to get rich from this, but because it has done the job. It's there. We just have to use it. And so I want to thank the WordCamp Canada people for picking up the ball in this. It could have very easily just dropped, and when we would have shown up there, and like we would all say, well, I don't know, what are we supposed to talk about today? We will be well prepared if is the way things look. So anyway, thank you all for listening. Talk to you soon. Bye.